The selection committee sat around a table in the office of Mr. Seldom Bucket, the opera house's new owner. He'd been joined by Sal Zeller, the musical director, and Dr. Undershaft, the chorus master. "And so," said Mr. Bucket, "we come to, now let's see, Christine. Marvellous stage presence, and, good figure too." He winked at Dr. Undershaft.
"Yes, very pretty," said Dr. Undershaft flatly. "Can't sing, though."
"What you, artistic types don't realise is this is the century of the fruit bat," said Bucket. "Opera is a production, not just a lot of songs."
"So you say, but..."
"The idea that a soprano should be 15 acres of bosom in a horned helmet belongs to the past, like." Sal Zeller and Undershaft exchanged glances. So he was going to be that kind of owner.
"Unfortunately," said Sal Zeller sourly, "the idea that a soprano should have a reasonable singing voice does not belong to the past. She has a good figure, yes. She certainly has a sparkle. But she can't sing."
"You can train her, can't you?" said Bucket. "A few years in the chorus."
"Yes, maybe after a few years, if I persevere, she will be merely very bad," said Undershaft.
Gentlemen, said Mr. Bucket. "Ahem. All right, cards on the table, eh? I'm a simple man, me. No beating about the bush. Speak as you find. Call a spade a spade."
"Do give us your forthright views," said Sal Zeller.
"Definitely that kind of owner," he thought. "Self-made man, proud of his handiwork, confuses bluffness and honesty with merely being rude. I wouldn't mind betting a dollar that he thinks he can tell a man's character by testing the firmness of his handshake and looking deeply into his eyes."
"I've been through the mill, I have," Bucket began, "and I made myself, what I am today."
"Self-raising flower," thought Sal Zeller.
"But I have to, declare a bit of a financial interest. Her dad did, in fact, lend me a fair whack of money to help me buy this place, and he made a heartfelt fatherly request in regard to his daughter. If I bring it to mind correctly, his exact words were, don't make me have to break your legs. I don't expect you artistes to understand. It's a business thing. The gods help those who help themselves. That's my motto."
Sal Zeller stuck his hands in his waistcoat pockets, leaned back, and started to whistle softly.
"I see," said Undershaft. "Well, it's not the first time it's happened. Normally, it's a ballerina, of course."
"Oh, it's nothing like that," said Bucket hurriedly. "It's just that, with the money, comes this girl, Christine. And you have to admit, she does look good."
"Oh, very well," said Sal Zeller. "It's your opera house, I'm sure. And now, Perdita?"
They smiled at one another.
"Perdita," said Bucket,
relieved to get the Christine business over so that he could go back to being bluff and honest again.
"Perdita X,"
Sal Zeller corrected him.
"What will these girls think of next?" "I think she will prove an asset," said Undershaft.
"Yes, if we ever do that opera with the elephants."
"But the range, what a range she's got."
"Quite. I saw you staring."
"I meant her voice, Sal Zeller. She will add body to the chorus."
"She is a chorus. We could sack everyone else. Ye gods, she can even sing in harmony with herself. But can you see her in a major role?"
"Good grief, no. We'd be a laughingstock."
"Quite so. She seems quite amenable, though."
"Wonderful personality, I thought. And good hair, of course."
She'd never expected it to be this easy. Agnes listened in a kind of trance while people talked at her about wages, very little, and the need for training, a lot, and accommodation. Members of the chorus lived in the opera house itself, up near the roof. And then, more or less, she was forgotten about. She stood and watched at the side of the stage while a group of ballet hopefuls were put through their delicate paces.
"You do have an amazing voice," said someone behind her.
She turned. As Nanny Ogg had once remarked, it was an education seeing Agnes turn round. She was light enough on her feet, but the inertia of outlying parts meant that bits of Agnes were still trying to work out which way to face for some time afterwards. The girl who had spoken to her was slightly built, even by ordinary standards, and had gone to some pains to make herself look even thinner. She had long, blonde hair, and the happy smile of someone who is aware that she is thin and has long, blonde hair.
"My name's Christine," she said. "Isn't this exciting?"
And she had the type of voice that can exclaim a question. It seemed to have an excited little squeak permanently screwed to it.
"Yes," said Agnes. "I've been waiting for this day for years."
Agnes had been waiting for it for about 24 hours, ever since she'd seen the notice outside the opera house. But she'd be danged if she'd say that.
"Where did you train?" said Christine. "I spent 3 years with Madame Venturi at the Quirm Conservatory."
"I was..." Agnes hesitated, trying out the upcoming sentence in her head. "I trained with Dame Ogg, but she hasn't got a conservatory, because it's hard to get the glass up the mountain."
Christine didn't appear to want to question this. Anything she found too difficult to understand, she ignored.
"The money in the chorus isn't very good, is it?"
she said. "No. It was less than you'd get for scrubbing floors. The reason was that when you advertised a dirty floor, hundreds of hopefuls didn't turn up."
"But it's what I've always wanted to do. Besides, there's the status."
"Yes, I expect there is."
"I've been to look at the rooms we get. They're very pokey. What room have you been given?"
Agnes looked down blankly at the keys she had been handed, along with many sharp instructions about no men, and an unpleasant not-that-you-need-telling expression on the chorus mistress's face.
"Oh, 17.
Christine clapped her hands.
"Oh, goody!
"Pardon?
"I'm so glad you're next to me."
Agnes was taken aback. She'd always been resigned to being the last to be picked in the great team game of life.
"Well, yes, I suppose so," she said.
"You're so lucky you've got such a majestic figure for opera. And such marvellous hair, the way you pile it up like that. Black suits you, by the way."
Majestic, thought Agnes. It was a word that would never, ever have occurred to her. And she'd always steered away from white, because in white she looked like a washing line on a windy day. She followed Christine. It occurred to Agnes, as she trudged after the girl en route to her new lodgings, that if you spent much time in the same room as Christine, you'd need to open a window to stop from drowning in punctuation. From somewhere at the back of the stage, quite unheeded, someone watched them go. People were generally glad to see Nanny Ogg. She was good at making them feel at home in their own home. But she was a witch, and therefore also expert at arriving just after cakes were baked or sausages were made. Nanny Ogg generally travelled with a string bag stuffed up one knee-length knicker leg, in case, as she put it, someone wants to give me something.
"So, Mrs. Knit," she observed, around about the third cake and fourth cup of tea. "How's that daughter of yours, Agnes, it is to whom I refer?" "Oh, didn't you hear, Mrs. Ogg? She's gone off to Ankh Morpork to be a singer."
Nanny Ogg's heart sank.
"That's nice," she said. "She had a good singing voice, I remember. Of course, I gave her a few tips. I used to hear her singing in the woods." "It's the air here," said Mrs. Knit. "She's always had such a good chest." "Yes, indeed. Noted for it. So she's not here, then." "You know our Agnes. She never says much. I think she thought it was a bit dull."
"Dull? Lunkra?" said Nanny Ogg.
"That's what I said," said Mrs. Knit. "I said we get some lovely sunsets up here. And there's the fair, every Soul Cake Tuesday, regular."
Nanny Ogg thought about Agnes. You needed quite large thoughts to fit all of Agnes in. Lunkra had always bred strong, capable women. A Lunkra farmer needed a wife who'd think nothing of beating a wolf to death with her apron when she went out to get some firewood. And while kissing initially seemed to have more charms than cookery, a stolid Lunkra lad, looking for a bride, would bear in mind his father's advice that kisses eventually lost their fire, but cookery tended to get even better over the years, and direct his courting to those families that clearly showed a tradition of enjoying their food. Agnes was, Nanny considered, quite good-looking in an expansive kind of way. She was a fine figure of typical young Lancre womanhood. This meant she was approximately two womanhoods from anywhere else. Nanny also recalled her being rather thoughtful and shy, as if trying to reduce the amount of world she took up. But she had shown signs of craft ability. That was only to be expected. There was nothing like that not-fitting-in feeling to stimulate the old magical nerves. That was why Esme was so good at it. In Agnes's case, this had manifested itself in a tendency to wear soppy black lace gloves and pale makeup and call herself Perdita, plus an initial from the arse of the alphabet. But Nanny had assumed that would soon burn off when she got some serious witchcraft under her rather strained belt. She should have paid more attention to the thing about music. Power found its way out by all sorts of routes. Music and magic had a lot in common. They were only two letters apart, from one thing, and you couldn't do both. Damn. Nanny had rather been counting on the girl. "She used to send off to Ankh-Morpork for music," said Mrs. Knitt. "See?" She handed Nanny several piles of papers. Nanny leafed through them. Song sheets were common enough in the Ramtops, and a sing-song in the parlour was considered the third best thing to do on long, dark evenings, but Nanny could see this wasn't ordinary music. It was far too crowded for that. "Cosy van Heter," she read. "Die Meistersinger von Schroeter." "That's foreign," said Mrs. Knitt proudly.
"It certainly is," said Nanny.
Mrs. Knitt was looking expectantly at her.
"What?"
said Nanny. And then, "Oh!" Mrs. Knitt's eyes flickered to her emptied teacup and back again. Nanny Ogg sighed and laid the music aside. Occasionally she saw Granny Weatherwax's point. Sometimes people expected too little of witches.
"Yes, indeedy," she said, trying to smile. "Let us see what destiny in the form of those dried-up bits of leaf has in store for us, eh?"
She set her features in a suitable occult expression and looked down into the cup, which, a second later, smashed into fragments when it hit the floor. It was a small room. In fact, it was half a small room, since a thin wall had been built across it. Junior members of the chorus ranked rather lower than apprentice scene shifters in the opera. There was room for a bed, a wardrobe, a dressing table, and, quite out of place, a huge mirror as big as the door.
"Impressive, isn't it?" said Christine. "They tried to take it out, but it's built into the wall, apparently. I'm sure it would be very useful."
Agnes said nothing. Her own half-room, the other half of this one, didn't have a mirror. She was glad of that. She did not regard mirrors as naturally friendly. It wasn't just the images they showed her. There was something worrying about mirrors. She'd always felt that. They seemed to be looking at her. Agnes hated being looked at. Christine stepped into the small space in the middle of the floor and twirled. There was something very enjoyable about watching her. It was the sparkle, Agnes thought. Something about Christine suggested sequins.
"Isn't this nice?" she said.
Not liking Christine would be like not liking small fluffy animals. And Christine was just like a small fluffy animal. A rabbit, perhaps. It was certainly impossible for her to get a whole idea into her head in one go. She had to nibble it into manageable bits. Agnes glanced at the mirror again. Her reflection stared at her. She could have done with some time to herself right now. Everything had happened so quickly, and this place made her uneasy. Everything would feel a lot better if she could just have some time to herself. Christine stopped twirling.
"You all right?"
Agnes nodded.
"Do tell me about yourself."
Well, Agnes was gratified, despite herself. "I'm from somewhere up in the mountains you've probably never heard of."
She stopped. A light had gone off in Christine's head, and Agnes realised that the question had been asked not because Christine in any way wanted to know the answer, but for something to say. She went on.
"And my father is the Emperor of Klatch, and my mother is a small tray of raspberry puddings."
"That's interesting," said Christine, who was looking at the mirror. "Do you think my hair looks right?"
What Agnes would have said, if Christine had been capable of listening to anything for more than a couple of seconds, was she'd woken up one morning with the horrible realisation that she'd been saddled with a lovely personality. It was as simple as that. Oh, and very good hair. It wasn't so much the personality, it was the "but" that people always added when they talked about it. "But she's got a lovely personality," they said. It was the lack of choice that rankled. No one had asked her before she was born whether she wanted a lovely personality, or whether she'd prefer, say, a miserable personality, but a body that could take size 9 in dresses. Instead, people would take pains to tell her that beauty was only skin deep, as if a man ever fell for an attractive pair of kidneys. She could feel a future trying to land on her. She'd caught herself saying poot and dang when she wanted to swear, and using pink writing paper. She'd got a reputation for being calm and capable in a crisis. Next thing she knew, she'd be making shortbread and apple pies as good as her mother's, and then there'd be no hope for her. So she'd introduced Perdita. She'd heard somewhere that inside every fat woman was a thin woman trying to get out, or at least dying for a chocolate. So she'd named her Perdita. She was a good repository for all those thoughts that Agnes couldn't think on account of her wonderful personality. Perdita would use black writing paper if she could get away with it, and would be beautifully pale instead of embarrassingly flushed. Perdita wanted to be an interestingly lost soul in plum-coloured lipstick. Just occasionally, though, Agnes thought Perdita was as dumb as she was. Was the only alternative the witches? She'd felt their interest in her in a way she couldn't exactly identify. It was of a piece with knowing when someone was watching you, although she had, in fact, occasionally seen Nanny Ogg watching her in a critical kind of fashion, like someone inspecting a second-hand horse. She knew she did have some talent. Sometimes she knew things that were going to happen, although always in a sufficiently confused way that the knowledge was totally useless until afterwards. And there was her voice. She was aware it wasn't quite natural. She'd always enjoyed singing, and somehow her voice had just done everything she'd wanted it to do. But she'd seen the ways the witches lived. Oh, Nanny Ogg was all right, quite a nice old baggage, really. But the others were weird, lying crosswise on the world instead of nicely parallel to it like everyone else. Old Mother Dismas, who could see into the past and the future but was totally blind in the present. And Millie Hopwood over in Slice, who stuttered and had runny ears. And as for Granny Weatherwax... Oh, yes, finest job in the world, being a sour old woman with no friends. They were always looking for weird people like themselves. Well, they could look in vain for Agnes Knitt. Fed up with living in Lancre, and fed up with the witches, and above all, fed up with being Agnes Knitt, she'd escaped. Nanny Ogg didn't look built for running, but she covered the ground deceptively fast, her great heavy boots kicking up shoals of leaves. There was a trumpeting overhead. Another skein of geese passed across the sky, so fast in pursuit of the summer that their wings were hardly moving in the ballistic rush. Granny Weatherwax's cottage looked deserted. It had, Nanny felt, a particularly empty feel. She scurried around to the back door and burst through, pounded up the stairs, saw the gaunt figure on the bed, reached an instant conclusion, grabbed the pitcher of water from its place on the marble washstand, ran forward. A hand shot up and grabbed her wrist. "I was having a nap," said Granny, opening her eyes. "Githa, I swear I could feel you coming half a mile away."
"Oh, we've got to make a cup of tea, quick,"
gasped Nanny, almost sagging with relief. Granny Weatherwax was more than bright enough not to ask questions. But you couldn't hurry a good cup of tea. Nanny Ogg jiggled from one foot to the other while the fire was pumped up, the small frogs fished out of the water bucket, the water boiled, the dried leaves allowed to seep.
"I ain't saying nothing," said Nanny, sitting down at last. "Just pour a cup, that's all."
On the whole, witches despised fortune-telling from tea-leaves. Tea-leaves are not uniquely fortunate in knowing what the future holds. They are really just something for the eyes to rest on while the mind does the work. Practically anything would do. The scum on a puddle, the skin on a custard, anything. Nanny Ogg could see the future in the froth on a beer mug. It invariably showed that she was going to enjoy a refreshing drink, which she almost certainly was not going to pay for.
"You recall young Agnes Knitt?"
said Nanny, as Granny Weatherwax tried to find the milk. Granny hesitated.
"Agnes, who calls herself Perditax?"
"Perdita X,"
said Nanny. She at least respected anyone's right to recreate themselves. Granny shrugged.
"Fat girl, big hair, walks with her feet turned out, sings to herself in the woods, good voice, reads books, says poot instead of swearing, blushes when anyone looks at her, wears black lace gloves with the fingers cut out."
"You remember we once talked about maybe how she possibly might be suitable?
"Oh, there's a twist in the soul there, you're right,"
said Granny. "But it's an unfortunate name."
"Her father's name was Terminal," said Nanny Ogg reflectively. "There were three sons, Primal, Medial, and Terminal. I'm afraid the family's always had a problem with education."
"I meant Agnes," said Granny. "Always puts me in mind of Carpet Fluff, that name."
"Probably that's why she called herself Perdita," said Nanny.
"Worse."
"Got her fixed in your mind?" said Nanny.
"Yes, I suppose so."
"Good. Now, look at them tea leaves."
Granny looked down. There was no particular drama, perhaps because of the way Nanny had built up expectations, but Granny did hiss between her teeth.
"Well, now, there's a thing," she said.
"See it? See it?"
"Yep."
"Like a skull?"
"Yep."
"And them eyes? I nearly... I was pretty damn surprised by them eyes, I can tell you."
Granny carefully replaced the cup.
"Her mum showed me her letters home," said Nanny. "I brung 'em with me. It's worrying, Esme. She could be facing something bad. She's a Lunkra girl, one of ours. Nothing's too much trouble when it's one of your own, I always say."
"Tea leaves can't tell the future," said Granny quietly. "Everyone knows that."
"Tea leaves don't know."
"Well, who'd be so daft as to tell anything to a bunch of dried leaves?" Nanny Ogg looked down at Agnes's letters home. They were written in the careful rounded script of someone who'd been taught to write as a child by copying letters on a slate and had never written enough as an adult to change their style. The person writing them had also very conscientiously drawn faint pencil lines on the paper before writing.
"Dear ma'am, I hope this finds you as it leaves me. Here I am in Ankh-Morpork Pork and everything is all right. I have not been ravished yet. I am staying at 4 Treacle Mine Road. It is all right. And..."
Granny tried another.
"Dear mum, I hope you are well. Everything is fine, but the money runs away like water here. I am doing some singing in taverns, but I am not making much, so I went to see the Guild of Seamstresses about getting a sewing job, and I took along some stitching to show them, and you'd be amazed. That's all I can say."
And another.
"Dear mother, some good news at last. Next week they are holding auditions at the Opera House."
"What's opera?" said Granny Weatherwax.
"It's like theatre with singing," said Nanny Ogg.
"Huh? Theatre?"
said Granny darkly.
"Our Nev told me about it. It's all singing in foreign languages, he said. He couldn't understand any of it."
Granny put down the letters.
"Yes, but your Nev can't understand a lot of things. What was he doing at this opera theatre, anyway?"
"Nicking the lead off the roof."
Nanny said this quite happily. It wasn't theft if an Og was doing it.
"Can't tell much from the letters except that she's picking up an education," said Granny. "But it's a long way to..."
There was a hesitant knock on the door. It was Sean Ogg, Nanny's youngest son, and Lonkra's entire civil and public service. Currently he had his postman's badge on. The Lunkra postal service consisted of taking the mailbag off the nail where the coach left it and delivering it to the outlying homesteads when he had a moment, although many citizens were in the habit of going down to the sack and rummaging until they found some mail they liked. He touched his helmet respectfully at Granny Weatherwax.
"Got a lot of letters, Mum," he said to Nanny Ogg. "They're all addressed to, well, you'd better have a look, Mum."
Nanny Ogg looked at the proffered bundle.
"The Lunkra Witch," she said aloud.
"That'd be me, then," said Granny Weatherwax firmly, and took the letters.
"Ah, well, I'd better be going," said Nanny, backing towards the door.
"Can't imagine why people'd be writing to me," said Granny, slitting an envelope. "Still, I suppose news gets around."
She focused on the words.
"Dear Witch," she read, "I would just like to say how much I appreciated the famous carrot and oyster pie recipe. My husband..."
Nanny Ogg made it halfway down the path before her boots became suddenly too heavy to lift.
"Giffer Ogg, you come back here right now!"
Agnes tried again. She didn't really know anyone in Ankh-Morpork, and she did need someone to talk to, even if they didn't listen.
"I suppose, mainly, I came because of the witches," she said.
Christine turned, her eyes wide with fascination. So was her mouth. It was like looking at a rather pretty bowling ball.
Witches? She breathed.
Oh, yes, said Agnes wearily. Yes, people were always fascinated by the idea of witches. They should try living around them, she thought.
Do they do spells and ride around on broomsticks?
Oh, yes.
No wonder you ran away.
What? Oh, no, it's not like that. I mean, they're not bad. It's much worse than that.
Worse than bad?
They think they know what's best for everybody. Christine's forehead wrinkled, as it tended to when she was contemplating a problem more complex than, what is your name?
That doesn't sound very bad.
They mess people around. They think that just because they're right, that's the same as good. It's not even as though they do any real magic. It's all fooling people and being clever. They think they can do what they like. The force of the words knocked even Christine back.
Oh, dear. Did they want you to do something?
They want me to be something, but I'm not going to. Christine stared at her and then automatically forgot everything she'd just heard.
Come on, she said. Let's have a look around.
Nanny Ogg balanced on a chair and took down an oblong wrapped in paper. Granny watched sternly with her arms folded.
Thing is, Nanny babbled under the laser glare, my late husband, I remember him once saying to me, after dinner, he said, you know, Mother, it'd be a real shame if all the stuff you know just passed away when you did. Why don't you write some of it down? So I scribbled the odd one when I had a moment, and then I thought it'd be nice to have it all properly done. So I sent it off to the almanac people in Unkmorpork, and they hardly charged me anything, and a little while ago they sent me this. I think it's a very good job. It's amazing how they get all the letters so neat.
You done a book, said Granny.
Only cookery, said Nanny Ogg meekly, as one might plead a first offence.
What do you know about it? You hardly ever do any cooking, said Granny.
I do specialities, said Nanny. Granny looked at the offending volume.
The Joy of Snacks, she read aloud. By a Lankra Witch. Heh! Why didn't you put your own name on it, eh? Books got to have a name on them so's everyone knows who's guilty.
It's my gnome de plume, said Nanny. Mr. Gortberger, the almanac man, said it'd make it sound more mysterious.
Granny cast her gimlet gaze to the bottom of the crowded cover, where it said in very small lettering, CXXV11th, printing, more than 20,000 sold, $1.50.
You sent them some money to get it all printed?
Only a couple of dollars, said Nanny. Damn good job they made of it, too. And they sent the money back afterwards, only they got it wrong, and sent $3 extra. Granny Weatherwax was grudgingly literate, but keenly numerate. She assumed that anything written down was probably a lie, and that applied to numbers, too. Numbers were used only by people who wanted to put one over on you. Her lips moved silently as she thought about numbers.
Oh, she said quietly. And that was it? You never wrote to him again?
Not on your life. $3, mind. I didn't want him saying he wanted them back.
I can see that, said Granny, still dwelling in the world of numbers. She wondered how much it cost to do a book. It couldn't be a lot.
They had sort of printing mills to do the actual work.
After all, there's a lot you can do with $3, said Nanny.
Right enough, said Granny. You ain't got a pencil about you, have you? You being a literary type and all.
I got a slate, said Nanny. Pass it over then. I've been keeping it by me in case I wake up in the night and I get an idea for a recipe. See? Said Nanny.
Good, said Granny vaguely.
The slate pencil squeaked across the grey tablet. The paper must cost something, and you'd probably have to tip someone a couple of pennies to sell it. Angular figures danced from column to column.
I'll make a cup of tea, shall I? Said Nanny,
relieved that the conversation appeared to be coming to a peaceful end. Said Granny. She stared at the result and drew two lines under it.
But you enjoyed it, didn't you? She called out. The writing?
Nanny Ogg poked her head around the scullery door.
Oh, yes. The money didn't matter, she said.
You've never been very good at numbers, have you?
Said Granny. Now she drew a circle around the final figure.
Oh, you know me, Esme, said Nanny cheerfully. I couldn't subtract a fart from a plate of beans.
That's good. "'Cause I reckon this Master Goatburger owes you a bit more than you got,
if there's any justice in the world," said Granny.
"Money ain't everything, Esme. What I say is, if you've got your health, I reckon if there's any justice, it's about $4,000 or $5,000," said Granny quietly.